This research is a retrospective analysis of that attempts to exploit the selection history and breeding history in the canal sugarcane breeding program to see. What is that? That's an attempt to use the breeding history in the Canal Point sugarcane breeding program to see if we can disentangle the different forces of selection and genetic drift and be able really to track the footprint of selection in that breeding program. I'll give you an overview of that Canal Point breeding program. It started really a long time ago to help the Louisiana sugarcane breeding program that was being affected by mosaic disease. And since 1966, it exists as it is, which is a tripartite project between USDARS, the University of Florida, and the growers represented by the Florida Sugarcane League. And there was a private company called U.S. Sugar Corporation, which recently stopped their breeding program. Sugarcane is a very complex polyploid system. All the known species are highly polyploid, with the basic chromosome numbers start as 8, ranging from 8 to 10. And the chromosome numbers can range from 40 to 130, for example, in the commercial sugarcane cultivars. Sugarcane breeding really started by intercrossing a wild spontaneum by the noble type, which tend to have high sucrose content. And those very early hybrids were spread all over the world in starting those breeding programs. So there were very, very few founders of those breeding populations. And up to now, they are still intercrossing within those progenies descending from those early founders. And Darren did a study of the Canal Point sugarcane breeding program in Louisiana and found that there were at least 13 founders that started those two breeding programs. We use usually a recurrent selection program, which is not really that well disciplined, because we do have really overlapping generations. Proven cross get to be repeated over time, and up to now we still have some those early hybrids that's still being used to cross. And create different cultivars. We use both biparental and polycrosses. I did a study in 2005 that was published in Crop Science, where I tracked the genetic gains that were being obtained in that Canal Point breeding program over 33 years. And I found that there were gains for all sucrose content, cane yield, and sugar yield, using really this last stages of our selection data from the last stages of our selection program, and data that we obtained really from the industry. And I followed up with a field study using genotypes, early genotypes up to 1999, and the field study did prove also, at least for sucrose content, that we still have really gain in that breeding program. So that taking that into account, it's fair to say that we have been really targeting those genomic regions that are really responsible for those threats. And we can assume that by following that selection scheme, we can really track on the signature of selection and use that a cheap way of really finding molecular markers that would be associated with those threats. This is here an example of the Green German is that I'm using for that's a is the female parent of a mapping population that I'm using. It looks like a commercial. We thought that it was an officinarum species, but it tends to be a hybrid of unknown origin. And this is a spontaneum, which is a wild stuff that we use as a male parent to do that starting mapping population. Like I was saying, if we have been making progress really in the canal point breeding program, we have been really acting on those genomic regions responsible for those tracks. And we can track really over time the footprint of selection to be able to find markers associated with those threats. Keep in mind that there are also different forces that can act on the breeding population, like genetic drift, where the alleles are being lost and gained without really affecting really the genomic region. There can be selection that tends to have specific action on specific regions of the genome. There's also mutation. Bottleneck, which is the loss really of alleles or fragments in the breeding population that can really reduce genetic diversity. You can have some founder's effects, like in sugarcane, very few individuals were used at the start of the breeding programs. Another term to keep in mind is balancing selection, where let's start first by directional selection, where you can have different environments you are targeting, and you're really driving those breeding populations to fit those target environments, and that can really separate your breeding population and create some genetic diversity. As compared to balancing selection, where, for example, it tends to really create some genetic variation in the breeding population, as compared to directional selection that tend to reduce genetic variation in the specific regions of the genome. My objectives were to use the history of that breeding population to see really how selection has shaped the patterns of genetic diversity by tracking the temporal changes in genetic diversity, by trying to detect the candidate loci on the selection, and also to elucidate the type of selection, like is it balancing, is it directional selection that's governed that genetic diversity in that breeding program. And I will attempt also to compare the molecular variation with the phenotypic quantitative variation, and see really if both are showing the same effect. I'm using 92 sugarcane genotypes, including the early progenitors, the first clones that were used, like the wild stuff, the spons, etc., and the officinarum. And the hybrid founders were the early hybrids that were spread all over the world to start those breeding populations. I also included the cultivar that were released in Florida from 1950 to 1999. And I'm using two classes of molecular markers. TRAPS is a marker system that uses a two-prime system that uses where the fixed primer is designed to target around EST, to target really gene regions, and also the TRAP markers also are designed to target both intronic and exonic regions of the genome. The TRAP technology was used in Dr. Kimbeng's lab, and I did the microsatellite genotyping using 12 primer combinations that were developed in sugarcane. Sugarcane being a polyploid, we cannot really exploit the codominant nature of microsatellites, so both marker systems were used as dominant markers using the 0-1 matrix. For genetic diversity, I'm using different parameters like gene diversity, or what they call expected heterozygosity, number of fragments per decade, the percent of polymorphic loci, and also the temporal changes in band frequencies that can allow you to detect if it's balancing selections or whatever, if there were some bottleneck events and so on that occurred in that breeding population. And I divided those genotypes into 7 decades, the progenitors, the early hybrid founders, and 4 decades in the breeding program. And I'm also using different software that are specific for dominant markers to be able to assess, to estimate the genetic gene diversity based on the Zivostoki and also to be able to estimate the genetic, the coefficient of relationship among the genotypes. POP was used for cluster analysis to be able to define a tree, to see really if the genotypes are really different from one from each other. I'm not going to present the structure method here, but I use that program that I obtained from Dr. Bowman that allows you to use the marker system, the dominant marker system, and be able to determine by comparing the neutral markers with any outliers that tend to be, that would be indicative of markers that would be under selection. This table shows you the genotype that I've used. The first part here includes the progenitors, like the spont, the official arum, and so on. Those were some early hybrids that were used in the breeding program that went all over the world. And this group here, there was the University of Florida started a breeding program before us. And those genotypes also were used in our breeding program to start that breeding program. And from here to 1999, those are all genotypes, except that last one include not only the cultivars that were released, but also cultivars that were in the last stage of selection in that breeding program. I'm going forward. This table shows the different genetic diversity estimate, like expected heterozygosity, the number of bends per marker type, and the percent polymorphic loci. And those are the genetic diversity across each decade, or within each decade, 1 to 7. And you can see over time for both marker system, at first here you can see there was a big reduction really in genetic diversity, which are associated with a bottleneck effect that tend to create, for example, you can see the number of bends really changed dramatically from the first to the second group. And over time, really, there was a reduction in genetic diversity. The same also occurs for percent polymorphic loci over time, over decade. And the genetic differentiation in overall genetic differentiation for microsatellite was 0.02 and 0.04. That means there is really a weak differentiation from decade to decade. So that means we can consider that population really as a very intermixed population. The AMOVA analysis also corroborated what we found with the genetic diversity parameters, that there was a weak genetic differentiation with most of the variation really occurring within a decade than among decades. And for both marker systems, showing about the same, except that there was a relative, the magnitude was stronger really for the trap marker system than really for the microsatellite. This graph shows changes in band frequency over time. This is the progenitor population. This is the early founder population. And this is the Florida cultivars. This side here shows the frequency changes for microsatellite, while the right side shows the frequency changes for the trap marker system. You can see really the microsatellite never reached really fixation, while the trap marker system over time there was an increase in band frequency. This one was for the first decade of cultivars released in our breeding program, the second and the third. And you can see for the microsatellite system, microsatellite markers, they never reached fixation. They stayed at about the same, at low frequency. Whereas the trap marker system really shows that some bend gets to get lost and some reach fixation. So that means we probably, those marker bend would probably have been really selected for. This is the change in the genetic, in the coefficient of relationship over time for the microsatellite and for the trap marker system. And they both show about the same thing. There was a slow really increase in the coefficient of relationship among the genotypes or among the cultivars released over time. This is a consensus tree that was done with POP that shows really that there was not really a clear clustering of all the cultivars in that breeding program. But we can see that, for example, the wild genotypes tend to be by themselves, like the gentler, which is a spot. This is a silency. While there were some, for example, LA purple, that's one cultivar that was, that's an officinarum that was used very early. And Darren did found that really most of our genotypes, of our cultivars really were derived really from LA purple. And there were some influences from, for example, this one, this is in a cultivar that was developed in India, where, for example, these genotypes really tend to derive from that CO1184. After that, there was not really a clear clustering of all the genotypes. To be able to infer selection, that program, DFDIS, tried to simulate the neutral markers to see the expectation of those neutral markers are compared to those ones that would be outliers by determining the 95% confidence interval. This line is the, by comparing, let's say, heterozygosity and the genetic differentiation. Any markers that are outside of that, if they were above that upper limit, they would be on the directional selection. But any markers that falls below the lower limit is said to be on the balancing selection. And you can see that for both marker system, the microsatellite and the trap, they indicate strongly that, for example, the ones that are in blue tends to be the putative, the candidate loci that could be under selection. And that fits really the breeding program because we do not really select for the higher stonage cultivars or the higher sucrose content because those two threats are really negatively correlated. So we tend to really to select cultivars that tend to have both some optimum and kentonage and sucrose content, which really indicates that's a balancing selection. This table here tends to show that, for example, for this is the FST for microsatellite and the FST for trap marker system. You can see for sucrose, the phenotypic variation was higher, which indicates really that selection was important in that breeding program, at least for sucrose content and breaks, because they were higher than the molecular variation. So I think there is room really to say that we can use those markers to really find association with those threats really in that breeding program. I could not really say for now which of those 12 microsatellites and which of the 12 trap markers really are the putative low size under selection. But to do this analysis, we did really do some assumption. Like those fragments really tend to segregate as a Mendelian, but we cannot really prove that. or a fragment of the same size really identical in state, which is difficult to prove. And being the genotypes really are on the Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium. And also there are some differences in mutation between the two marker systems. And that doesn't really prove that some of those neutral markers can also be on the genetic hitchhiking, fairly close to those genomic regions, and colors can also show some association with those threats. Well, in conclusion, I can say that the two marker system really did show this a weak level of genetic differentiation among decades, where most of the genetic variation was within each decade. And also there were reduction in genetic diversity, at least from the progenitor to the next populations. And both marker classes also indicated that balancing selection was the main factor really governing or shaping the pattern of genetic variation in that breeding program. And I did find also 10 microsatellite and 15 trap markers that could be under genetic selection. Generally, I should use really a genetic map and pick really different random markers and do that analysis, but my map is not ready yet. And also, that will allow me to detect really the QTL regions. My next move will be based on the map to really to indicate or to assess the extent of linkage disequilibrium and do also some association analysis with those markers to find markers really associated with those threats. All right, thank you very much.